Translation by Srila Prabhupada. When they saw Vidura return to the palace, that's very loud up there. I can hear him better than when they saw Vidura return to the palace, all the inhabitants, Maharaj Yudhishthir, his younger brothers, Dhritarashtra, Satyaki, Sanjaya, Kripacharya, Kunti, Gandhari, Draupadi, Subhadra, Uttara, Kripi, many other wives of the Kauravas and other ladies with children all hurried to him in great delight. It so appeared that they had regained their consciousness after a long period. Please repeat after me. When they saw Vidura return to the palace,
all the inhabitants
Maharaj Yudhishthir, his younger brothers, Dhritarashtra, Satyaki, Sanjaya, Kripacharya, Kunti, Gandhari, Draupadi, Subhadra, Uttara, Kripi, many other wives of the Kauravas, and other ladies with children, all hurried to him in great delight. It so appeared that they had regained their consciousness after a long period. Report by Srila Prabhupada. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada basically gives a very brief biography of four of the ladies mentioned in this verse. First is Gandhari, the ideal chaste lady in the history of the world. She was the daughter of Maharaj Subhala, the king of Gandhara, now Kandahar, in Afghanistan. We hear about it in the news all the time. And in her maiden state, she worshipped Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is generally worshipped by Hindu maidens to get a good husband. Gandhari satisfied Lord Shiva, and by his benediction to obtain 100 sons, she was betrothed to Dhritarashtra, despite his being blind forever. When Gandhari came to know that her would-be husband was a blind man, to follow her life companion, she decided to become voluntarily blind. So she wrapped up her eyes with many silk linens, and she was married to Dhritarashtra under the guidance of her elder brother, Shakuni. She was the most beautiful girl of her time, and she was equally qualified by her womanly qualities, which endeared every member of the Kaurava court. But despite all her good qualities, she had the natural frailties of a woman, and she was envious of Kunti when the latter gave birth to a male child. Both the queens were pregnant, but Kunti gave birth first to a male child. Thus Gandhari became angry and gave a blow to her own abdomen. As a result, she gave birth to a lump of flesh only. But since she was a devotee of Vyasadeva, by the instruction of Vyasadeva, the lump was divided into 100 parts, and each part gradually developed to become a male child. Thus her ambition to become the mother of 100 sons was fulfilled. She began to nourish all the children according to her exalted position. When the intrigue of the battle of Kurukshetra was going on, she was not in favor of fighting with the Pandavas. Rather, she blamed Dhritarashtra, her husband, for such a fratricidal war. In fact, she suggested that that Duryodhan should be killed. Twice in the assembly, she publicly said Duryodhan should be killed, because that way all her other sons would be saved. Everybody would be saved. She desired that the state be divided into two parts for the sons of Pandu and her own. She was very affected when all her sons died in the battle of Kurukshetra, and she wanted to curse Bhimasena and Yudhishthira, but she was checked by Vyasadeva. her mourning over the death of Duryodhan and Dushasan before Lord Krishna was very pitiful, and Lord Krishna pacified her by transcendental messages. She was equally aggrieved on the death of Karna, and she described to Lord Krishna the lamentation of Karna's wife. Karna was a unsung hero, because when Krishna was about to go back to Upaplavya from Hastinapur, after he had unsuccessfully tried to attempt peace, he brought Karna onto his chariot, and they went to a distance and had a secret conversation. And then Dhritarashtra was interested. What was the secret conversation? And in it, Krishna revealed to Karna that actually he was the oldest son of Kunti. Karna said, I know that. He already knew. Even Draupadi revealed later that he already knew it because his father told him, Surya did. And so Krishna said, you can be the king, because they will give you the kingdom. And Karna said, no, I am duty bound to Duryodhan. If you give me the kingdom, I'll give it to Duryodhan. Yudhishthira should be the king. He wanted Yudhishthira to be the king. So he knew he had to die. He had to die. He voluntarily died in the battle because he wanted Yudhishthira to be the king. And then he apologized to Krishna for any insult to Draupadi. Then he embraced Krishna, and Krishna embraced him. So he was a great hero. She was pacified by Srila Vyasadeva when he showed her dead sons, then promoted to the heavenly kingdoms. She died along with her husband in the jungles of the Himalayas near the mouth of the Ganga. She burned in a forest fire. Maharaj Yudhishthira performed the death ceremony of his uncle and aunt, Pritha, daughter of Maharaj Surasena and sister of Vasudeva, Lord Krishna's father. She was later adopted by Maharaj Kunti Bhoja, and hence she was known as Kunti. She is the incarnation of the success potency of the personality of Godhead. This is an interesting sentence. No matter how many times you read Srila Prabhupada's books, when I read the first canto many times, you always see something new. So when I read this yesterday, I said, I never saw this before. She is the incarnation of the success potency of the personality of Godhead. I did a little research and found out that what this means is that the Chaturvyuha, according to the Lakshmi Tantra, in the Chaturvyuha, they all have, there's six Kalyana Gunas. So Sankarshan has Jnana and Bhala. Pradyumna has Aishwarya and Virya. And Aniruddha has Shakti and Teja. So she is the incarnation of the Aishwarya Kalyana Guna of Pradyumna. And Vasudev has all six of these. Chaturvyuha. So that's a little extra about Kunti Devi. The heavenly denizens from the upper planets used to visit the palace of King Kunti Bhoja, and Kunti was engaged for their reception. She also served the great mystic sage Durvasa, and being satisfied by her faithful service, Durvasa Muni gave her a mantra by which it was possible for her to call on any demigod she pleased. Now, the reason Durvasa Muni gave that to her was because he, being a Trikalagyani, knew that her husband would be cursed not to have children of his own. So he gave her this mantra. According to the Mahabharata, that was the reason he gave it to her. As a matter of inquisitiveness, she had once called for the sun god who desired couplement with her. This verse is about Vidura. So later Vidura, he explains that one of the many weaknesses of the, all the weaknesses that women have, their worst weakness is curiosity. Being curious. By being curious, Sita wanted the deer. By being curious, Kunti wanted to try out the mantra. She wanted to, as a matter of inquisitive, she once called for the sun god who desired couplement with her, but she declined. But the sun god assured her immunity from virgin adulteration, and so she agreed to his proposal. As a result of this couplement, she became pregnant, and Karna was born by her. By the grace of the sun, she again turned into a virgin girl, but was afraid of her parents. By being afraid of her parents, she quitted the newly born child, Karna. After that, when she actually selected her own husband, she preferred Pandu to be her husband. Maharaj Pandu later wanted to retire from family life and adopt the renounced order of life. Kunti refused to allow her husband to adopt such life. But at last, Maharaj Pandu gave her permission to become a mother of sons by calling some other suitable personalities. Kunti did not accept this proposal at first, but when vivid examples were set by Pandu, she agreed. Thus, by dint of the mantra awarded by Durvasa Muni, she called for Dhanuraj, and thus Yudhisthira was born. She called for the demigod Vayu, and thus Bhima was born. She called for Indra, the king of heaven, and thus Arjuna was born. The other two sons, namely Nakula and Sahadev, were begotten by Pandu himself in the womb of... This is a mistake. He did not... She lent the mantra to Madri. This is a mistake in the purport. Later on, Maharaj Pandu died at an early age, for which Kunti was so aggrieved that she fainted. The two co-wives, namely Kunti and Madri, decided that Kunti should live for the maintenance of the five minor children. The Pandavas and Madri... And Madri should accept the sati rituals by meeting voluntary death along with her husband. This agreement was endorsed by great sages like Shatashringa and others present on the occasion. Later on, when the Pandavas were banished from the kingdom by the intrigues of Duryodhan, Kunti followed her sons, and she equally faced all sorts of difficulties during those days. During the forest life, one demon, Hidimba, wanted Bhima as her husband. Bhima refused, but when the girl approached Kunti and Yudhisthira, they ordered Bhima to accept her proposal and give her a son. As a result of this combination, Ghatotkacha was born, and he fought very valiantly with his father against the Kauravas. In their forest life, they lived with a Brahmana family, and that was in trouble because of one Bakasura demon. And Kunti ordered Bhima to kill the Bakasura to protect the Brahmana family against troubles created by the demon. She advised Yudhisthira to start for Panchaladesha. Draupadi was gained in this Panchaladesha by Arjuna, but was ordered by Kunti by order of Kunti, all five of the Pandava brothers became equally the husbands of Panchali or Draupadi. She was married with five Pandavas in the presence of Vyasadeva. So this being in the forest was not after the gambling match, but was between the time of the burning of the house of Lakh and returning to Hastinapur. Kunti Devi never forgot her first child Karna. And after Karna's death in the battle of Kurukshetra, she lamented, admitted before her other sons that Karna was her eldest son prior to her marriage with Maharaj Pandu. Her prayers for the Lord after the battle of Kurukshetra when Krishna was going back to home are excellently explained. Can you please turn off the ringers of your cell phones? Later, she went to the forest with Gandhari for severe penance. She used to take meals after each 30 days. She finally sat down in profound meditation and later burnt to ashes in a forest fire. Draupadi, the most chaste daughter of Maharaj Drupada, and partly an incarnation of goddess Sachi, the wife of Indra. Maharaj Drupada performed a great sacrifice under the superintendence of the sage Yajna. By his first offerings, Drustadyumna was born. By the second offering, Draupadi was born. She is therefore the sister of Drustadyumna, and she is also named Panchali. The five Pandavas married her as a common wife, and each of them begot a son in her. Maharaj Yudhishthira begot a son named Pratibhit. Bhimasen begot a son named Srutasoma. Juna begot Srutakirti. Nakula begot Shatanika. And Sahadev begot Srutakarma. She is described as a most beautiful lady, equal to her mother-in-law Kunti. During her birth, there was a Akashvani that she would be called, that she should be called Krishna. The same message also declared that she was born to kill many a Kshatriya. By dint of her blessings from Shankara, she was awarded five husbands, each equally qualified. When she preferred to select her own husband, princes and kings were invited from all the countries of the world. She was married with the Pandavas during their exile in the forest, but when she came back, when they went back home, Maharaj Drupada gave them immense wealth as a dowry. She was well received by all the daughters-in-law of Dhritarashtra. When she was lost in a gambling match, she was forcibly dragged into the assembly hall, and an attempt was made by Dushasan to see her naked beauty, even though there were elderly persons like Bhishma and Drona present. She was such an exalted lady that even though she was being dragged around, you know, in her period by her hair, she apologized to all the elderly persons that she was not able to give them proper respects. That's how, even though she's being totally insulted, she's apologizing to those persons who should be protecting her, that she's not able to give them proper respect. She was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, and by her praying, the Lord himself became an unlimited garment and to save her from the insult. A demon of the name Jatasura kidnapped her, but her second husband, Bhimasen, killed a demon and saved her. She saved the Pandavas from the curse of Maharshi Durvasa by the grace of Lord Krishna, by the Akshaya Patra. When the Pandavas lived incognito in the palace of Virata, Kichaka was attracted by her exquisite beauty. By arrangement with Bhima, the devil was killed and she was saved. She was very much aggrieved when her five sons were killed by Ashwatthama. And at the last stage, she accompanied her husband Yudhishthir and others and fell on the way. The cause of her falling was explained by Yudhishthir. But when Yudhishthir entered the heavenly planet, he saw Draupadi gloriously present as the goddess of fortune in the heavenly planet. Subhadra, daughter of Vasudev and sister of Lord Krishna. She was not only a very dear daughter of Vasudev, but also a very dear sister to both Krishna and Baladev. The two brothers and sisters are represented in the famous Jagannath temple at Puri, on an altar over here. And the temple is still visited by thousands of pilgrims daily. This temple is in remembrance of Lord's visit to Kurukshetra during an occasion of solar eclipse and his subsequent meeting with the residents of Vrindavan. The meeting of Radha and Krishna during the occasion is a very pathetic story. And Lord Sri Chaitanya, in the ecstasy of Radharani, always pined for Lord Krishna at Jagannath Puri. While Arjuna was in Dwarka, he wanted to have Subhadra as his queen, and he expressed his desire to Lord Krishna. Sri Krishna knew that his elder brother Lord Baladev was arranging her marriage elsewhere, and since he did not dare to go against the arrangements of Baladev, he advised Arjuna to kidnap Subhadra. So when all of them were on the pleasure trip to arrive at the hill, Arjuna managed to kidnap Subhadra according to the plan of Sri Krishna. Sri Baladev was very angry at Arjuna and he wanted to kill him. But Lord Krishna implored his brother to excuse Arjuna. Then Subhadra was duly married with Arjuna and Abhimanyu was born of Subhadra. At the premature death of Abhimanyu, Subhadra was very mortified. On the birth of Parikshit, she was happy and solaced.
I was born as the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the treasure of knowledge and offered myself the best of the day.
To the palace, all the inhabitants, Maharaj Yudhisthira, his younger brothers, Dhritarashtra, Satyaki, Sanjaya, Kripacharya, Kunti, Gandhari, Draupadi, Subhadra, Uttara, Kripi, and many other wives of the Kauravas and other ladies with children, all hurried to him in great delight. It so appeared that they had regained their consciousness after a long period. So the main read of the previous verse and this and subsequent verses is that everyone was so happy to see Vidura. He had been gone for such a long time that their life returned to them. So naturally the question arises, why? Why were they so happy to see Vidura? Not only he was the well-wisher of everybody, he was the great, he is the son of Vyasadeva, he is the brother-in-law of Kunti, the brother of Dhritarashtra, brother-in-law of Sula. He is intimately related to all of these people. So not, but it's not just because he is a relative, but he was, Duryodhana was also a relative. They weren't happy. He was a big troublemaker. But Vidura, he was actually the great well-wisher of every person in the assembly. He tried his best to stop the battle. He always properly advised Dhritarashtra what should be done. He himself said that Duryodhana should be killed. He publicly said Duryodhana should be killed. Yeah, that's very bold, because it always says one should speak very sweetly. How do you sweetly say that your nephew should be killed? In the Bhagavad Gita says one should speak words which are very pleasant, you know, this is tapasya. But how do you sweetly say that kill your son? So when truth has to be spoken, sometimes it's not pretty. And there's no sweet way of saying such things. So he was very courageous and he spoke the truth which needed to be said. And even Dhritarashtra agreed with him, but Dhritarashtra couldn't do it. Even Duryodhana's mother agreed with him. She also said he should be killed, because by killing him everyone else will be saved. But the real reason that Vidura was so liked by anyone, by everyone, was because he was very dear to Lord Krishna. That is the real reason. Because devotees are very dear to everyone. So that means a devotee is dear because Krishna loves Vidura. When Krishna came from Upaplavya to Hastinapur to negotiate, a ceasefire, a peace settlement, Duryodhan would very sweetly, he had conspired, he knew Krishna was coming, so he made pavilions all the way from Upaplavya to Hastinapur with all types of refreshments, hoping to ensnare Krishna the same way that he had ensnared Shalya, the brother of Madri. Here's how we trapped Shalya. He made all these nice stands, you know, along the journey, and Shalya ate all this food and all this refreshments, and he was so happy, he thought it was done by Yudhisthira. And he said, he made a vow that whoever has done this, I will fight for them, thinking it was Yudhisthira. And then he was mortified to find out it was Duryodhan. But Krishna, he didn't fall for this. Of course, Krishna doesn't need anything. So he just kept going. He didn't stop. He didn't take anything that Duryodhan provided. But when they got to the palace, Duryodhan very sweetly, with all his diplomacy, he invited Krishna to dinner, to eat. Krishna refused. Why? He says, because you hate the Pandavas, therefore you hate me. A person only eats for two reasons. If they're hungry, if there's need of hunger, or if it's offered with love. He says, because you hate the Pandavas, you hate me, and I'm not hungry. So I'm not going to eat with you. But because Vidura, because he loves the Pandavas, therefore he loves me. Therefore I will go to the Pandavas. I will go to Vidura's house and eat with him. So that is the importance of, because the Pandavas are very great devotees of Krishna. Someone who loved the Pandavas, Krishna loved them. And this because he was loved by Krishna, therefore everybody loved him, except Duryodhan. Because naturally Duryodhan was of that mentality. Only a serpent like Duryodhan would love Vidura. So the important point here is that the importance of serving someone who is dear to Krishna. If you can serve someone who is dear to Krishna, then everything opens for you. It's like Vidura, he was so beloved of Krishna that he became beloved of everybody. He went later. He also was studying with, in the third canto, there will be the questions of between Vidura and Maitreya. So, unlike Vidura, Vidura had the Pandavas who he could, you know, he saved them in so many ways. He saved them from the house of lack. He tried in so many different ways to, he loved both the Kauravas and the Pandavas, but he saw that the Pandavas were just, so naturally he tried to help them. So by his serving them, he became dear to Krishna. So we do not have the Pandavas like Vidura. If Vidura had the Pandavas, we have Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is our direct link to Krishna, to Lord Chaitanya, to Krishna, to the Guru Parampara. He is a very dearly beloved servant of Krishna. So, and similarly, like Vidura, if we can serve Srila Prabhupada, then we also become dear to Krishna. It's a very simple, not rocket science. You serve the devotee. Krishna says in the Adi Purana that those who say they are my devotees, they are not really my devotees. But those who are the devotees are my devotees. They are really my devotees. This is also one of the principles that Ramanujacharya propagated in Dasanudas, being the servant of the servant. The Lord Chaitanya also took this principle from Ramanujacharya. He took two principles from each of the acharyas. From Madhvacharya, he took the principle of uncompromising opposition to Mayavad, and that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. From Ramanuja, no compromise, no accepting of karma and jnana, just pure bhakti. And the concept of dasa nudas. And from Vishnu Swami, he accepted the concept of Bhagavad Marga and complete surrender to Krishna. Krishna Sharanam Mama. And from Nibarakacharya, he accepted the principles of the superlative excellence of the worship of the gopis and the supreme position of Ram Ram. So, but the main point here is Das Anudas. So how to please Srila Prabhupada? Today, tomorrow is the beginning of the marathon. So we want to, if we want to please Srila Prabhupada, then we have to follow, we have to fulfill his desires. One of his greatest desires was distribution of his books. He wrote all these books, he translated, he gave his life, his blood, to write these books. Every evening, he would go to bed at 10 in the evening and wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning and write until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, no matter where he was in the world. It's difficult to keep a regulated schedule if you're living in one place. But Srila Prabhupada, traveling around the world 12 times, he kept the same schedule no matter where he was. If he was in Tehran or in Tokyo or in New York, the same schedule to make these books. So, we want to please Srila Prabhupada, we have to distribute these books, because these books are the solution to the problems of the world. Right? Recently, very recently, there was a major tragedy took place in Mumbai. Very major material problem facing the world. Material problem, spiritual solution, and found in Srila Prabhupada's books. Srila Prabhupada explained that this whole issue with Muslims in India, the Muslims in India didn't, most of them were previously Hindus. But why they were not accepted back into the Vedic fold? Because of the caste Brahmins who were not following the Gita. Srila Prabhupada explained that my Garbhad has asked Srila Prabhupada if the Vedas were so great, Krishna gave them, why then Vedic culture was conquered by different societies, by the Greeks, the Muslims, the British? And Prabhupada chastised him, says that what, Krishna is your father's servant? He gave instructions, they didn't follow. Then this is the reaction. Chaturvarna maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagisa. That this is actually varnashram, not by, but Brahmins by birth, caste Goswamis, caste Brahmins. Because of having bogus Brahmins, bogus kings, then naturally this happened. But the main point Prabhupada also made was that because if somebody was forcibly converted to Islam, they didn't have any other option. They were excommunicated by these caste Brahmins. In fact, there was that one case of, it was Budhimanta Khan. He had some water sprinkled on him. And he was wondering by a Muslim. So he said, how I can become purified from this? And some caste Brahmin said, the only way you can become purified is by drinking boiling ghee, which of course will kill you. So he didn't like that idea so much. He went to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya just said, this by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Now Srila Prabhupada himself, he personally was preaching in Muslim countries. I said he was preaching in Tehran. If a devotee was to study Srila Prabhupada's conversations in Tehran, they will learn how to preach to Muslims. He was preaching to Muslims in Tehran. And they appreciated it. They became devotees. Muslims, everybody appreciates Srila Prabhupada's books if they're given in the right consciousness. Because like everybody else, they are suffering in this material world. It's a place of suffering. They are also suffering. They are just people like everybody else, and they're suffering. they have, and Muslims are reading Prem Prabhupada's books. A couple of days ago, I watched this 3D animated Krishna movie. So I was curious. I looked on the internet. It was made by Muslims. And in the beginning of the movie, they said, this book is based on Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna book of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. But not made by Hindus, made by Muslims. Made by Muslims. Many Muslims have become devotees because Prabhupada is not conquering with the sword of steel. He's conquering with the sword of knowledge. When he was preaching in Tehran, he never, nothing about religion. It is the science of God. It is the science of God. It has nothing to do with, God is not a Muslim, God is not a Hindu. It is, everybody is a servant of God. This is the real religion, isn't it? Just based upon Srila Prabhupada's teachings, when I came back to the West when I was in India in 2003, I arrived in New York the day before the Americans bombed Baghdad. I just flew over Baghdad. So I didn't realize how bad it was until I got to the States, because everybody in India was focused on the Cricket World Cup in South Africa. I didn't realize that the world was on the verge of war. So when I landed in New York, my flight to where my other destination was canceled because of a security breach. And then I realized how bad it was. I had to take a taxi to LaGuardia Airport. And I shared a taxi with a man who had just flown from Pakistan, and he was a Muslim, and the taxi driver was a Bangladeshi Muslim. So, based on what Srila Prabhupada taught me, I started preaching to them. And they were so appreciative. They said, everybody should think like this. Everybody should think like this. That is how Srila Prabhupada taught us. And he taught us science. Not that they're Hindus or Muslims. It is that everybody is a servant of God. This is the end. So this idea of being a Hindu or a Muslim is simply based upon bodily designation. You're a Hindu, why? Because your father was a Hindu? Isn't it? You didn't have a choice. Nobody said you have a choice in this. It's because you were there, they called you a shok or whatever. Now I have to be one of these things. And then on the other side of the lake, on the other side of the river, you know, the Indus, then his name is Mustafa, so therefore he's a Muslim. He doesn't have any choice either. Because now he has a different name, then we should kill each other. But it's all, you know, this is just material designation. It has nothing to do with the relationship of the God and the soul. That's why this is the Bhagavad Gita is the science of God. Krishna doesn't say this is for Hindus or this is for Muslims. It is for everybody. There are many, like my wife comes from former Yugoslavia. Many in Yugoslavia, there are many Muslims in Bosnia. Many have become devotees. Like one devotee's name, his karmic name is Muhammad Durmic. But his initiated name is Maha Chaitanya, disciple of Jagataka Swami. Muhammad Durmic, Maha Chaitanya. So, if these books are given, because how you can kill any Muslim? There's a billion Muslims, you can't kill. And they can't kill all the Hindus, there's a billion Hindus. You can't kill them. You can't kill them. This political solution, this military solution will not work. It's simply insanity. And everybody's got nuclear weapons. Isn't it? They've got nuclear weapons. And India has nuclear weapons. So that's called, the Russians and the Americans used to do that also. So they decided not to use them because it was mad. Mutually assured destruction. Mad, mutually assured. One uses it, the other uses it, and everybody gets killed. So they didn't use them. So there's no way. So the only solution is to make them devotees. That's the only solution. And as I said, they like Krishna, they like Prabhupada's books. Intelligent. When I first came to India, In 1977, I was in Hyderabad. Now, Hyderabad, you know, is a Nizam of Hyderabad. It's a Muslim dominated area. Do you see the four-legged goats and the two-legged goats? So many, you know, they look like goats also. But we had, I met a Muslim like me. And I used to go shopping every day for the deities, for the kitchen, and with the head cook. So my food suppliers were all Muslims. They all were very kind to me. Whenever a festival came, I said, everybody's donating. They all donated for Krishna. They're just people, like everybody else. Suffering, like everybody else. So, and everybody who they, you know, it's the, so it's our duty to first of all learn how to preach to Muslims and then to give them these books. I even see like that was the last year, the year before, for the Krishna, for the children's competition, many Muslim children were coming here. So they had to tell them their parents came because the mothers were wearing black burqas and couldn't hardly notice, they couldn't hardly miss them, you know. So this, it's the only solution. Is by giving this knowledge. Even today, the devotees are preaching in Muslim countries in North Africa. I was just meeting a couple days ago. Devotees who were, they were Muslims who joined in France. They were from North Africa, so they went. They were preaching in Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, and people loved them. They sold every one of their books. People loved their books. One bookstore demanded. He said, I want people to buy all of their books, every last book that they had. And he said, no, I can't. We have to distribute to other people. We want to buy all their books. They were so popular. The devotees are preaching in Iran. A few weeks ago, Conteo was here. He preaches, he's the GBC, he's the managing the devotees in Iran. When I was living in Delhi, when I was hospitalized for 11 months, many Muslims coming to the temple. And Iranians, Muslims from all over the world, they were coming to the temple. From Kazakhstan, from Turkey, Iran, especially the Iranian Muslims were very nice, very appreciative. So, material problem, spiritual solution. It's the only solution. Then you'll be beaten. Srila Prabhupada said, anyone who preaches in a Muslim country, I take the dust of their feet on my head. One of my godbrothers, they were preaching in Lebanon. Because another one of my godbrothers, Ravanari, who came to Bangalore in 1982, he was a Muslim. He joined in Germany. His family was 600 years. How many generations that is, but for 600 years his family was mullahs. He's the one who translated Bhagavad Gita into Arabic. And then they just went to Lebanon during the middle of the civil war and they were distributing Bhagavad Gitas. So one of my godbrothers, Nikhil Ananda, he was a German, he was distributing. They were distributing Gitas in a war zone because there was a civil war was going on. He would say how they went door to door distributing Gitas. And they come back the next week and that block of houses was gone. They had just been blown up. That's how much courage they had. Not only distributing in a Muslim country, but while a war is going on. But they distributed Gitas. Because they had that desire to teach Srila Prabhupada. So, we're also in a situation, becoming a war zone also. We have to be prepared. We have to do it. The more pressure, the more need to do the need, you know, to do what has to be done. So I was told that I have to cut. I wanted to read one thing, if possible, with permission, about the potency of Srila Prabhupada's books in another dangerous place. That was the two most dangerous places to preach Prabhupada's message was in Muslim countries and in Russia during the communist era. If anybody ever read Salted Bread? Anybody ever read Salted Bread? Yes, and you know. It's very dangerous. So this is, if I, with permission, I'd like to read this. This was This is about how the KGB dealt with the Bhagavad Gita. The effect of the Bhagavad Gita and the KGB. Anybody like to hear this? Okay. This is by a devotee who was a former KGB agent. His name is Karmagya Das. I was working in the Soviet Army. I spent quite some years also in the Afghanistan War. It was a very nasty experience that I wanted to orient myself to a more peaceful atmosphere. It was so nasty experience that I wanted to orient myself to a more peaceful atmosphere. So I joined the Moscow Institute that trains KGB staff. Of course, it is not publicly known to be in that function. I chose the justice line, for to become some spy in the foreign countries did not fit with my mind either. Once I had a discussion with one of my friends. He was the son of a highly placed KGB man. His father was a captain for a boat that was exporting goods, in quote. Exporting goods means, you know, sending military equipment to Vietnam or something like that, you know. Actually, they were transporting weapons. Okay, that's right. My friend's father was involved in bringing weapons to Vietnam and also participated in the conflicts in Egypt and in Greece, because they had so many proxy wars between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. So we were discussing once about religious movements. My friend said his father embarked on one occasion at some western harbor. He went to visit the Soviet embassy near the harbor to do some visa thing. He was away only half an hour. But when he came back, a few members from the crew showed him some, quote, Indian books. And he became so furious. More books were found. Altogether, 27 or 28 books. They were falling from everywhere. They were placed on the doorways, in the shelves, in the cabins. One was under the captain's bridge on the deck. My friend related how his father commented afterwards to him, being very irritated. I really chastise all those men. I'm hardly away from the boat for one moment, and immediately the whole boat becomes totally flooded and quote, radioactive from these books. That lazy guard fell asleep somewhere. I yelled at him that everyone should know that our enemy is watching and is always ready. In other words, somehow devotees stuffed this Russian boat with books. In due course, I started to prepare my diploma. It was about narcomania and drug addiction. But there were no public statistics about that. Everything was secret in the Moscow KGB library. So I complained about this to my tutor. That man was also a big shot in the KGB. So he gave me access to secondary level of confidential department in the library. I was mainly fascinated by occultism and thought that now I had my chance to read all the forbidden literature. And indeed, there was tons and tons of stuff, right from the beginning of Tsar's time. I became friends with the fellow who was in charge of the library, really a fanatic communist. He at one point showed me different religious departments in the library. Islam had their own room, Christianity its own, also Buddhism, and ISKCON, a whole department just about us. And a whole department, not just a room, a whole department. The man showed various life stories that were collected about different ISKCON gurus. There was a video film about famous Riga evening where Hari Kesh Maharaj was caught. Even some KGB men managed to film how an ISKCON devotee was beaten up on the street in Pakistan. He said, quote, "These Krishna fanatics are so crazy. Look, they just beat him up, but this fellow just continues to say his mantra. These people are so dangerous. They are so determined, and their books, don't touch them. So many of our agents have been burnt themselves." End quote. We were already sitting behind our coffee table, but this KGB fellow was just speaking about ISKCON. I was becoming more and more agitated, and I couldn't figure out why. This man bit his teeth together and shook his finger in disgust. Those hooligans! They are such hooligans! They are shaking the whole basis of our system. So clever. Those people are so sharp. Anywhere they sneak in with their boats. We check the boats that come from Germany, for example, and Scandinavia. The books are found in the most incredible places, from the cupboards and cabins. Even some were lying in the kitchen on the cook's recipe shelf. We even opened the ventilation system, and there were those damn books and brochures. What damn American brain is behind all this? Hooligans! We are not able to figure out what to do. End quote. Actually, one of the things that we were doing in Calcutta back in 80 and 81 is that we took the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita and we made thousands of copies of it, just that. And then some devotees had smuggled out of Russia telephone books from Petrograd, Moscow, some of the different cities. And then we stuffed envelopes full of the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita, and then we just copied names from the telephone books, and then we put postage and we distributed all different cities of India, put them in the mailbox and mailed, because India was an ally in Russia. So, so we were mailing, you know, thousands and thousands of copies. And of course, some of them were the KGB agents, but we didn't care. We didn't know, because we were just, whoever's name was in the telephone book, we were sending. Then this man proceeded to explain that the biggest problem for KGB was that most people refuse to give the books away. They usually give them. Once they got to know that one KGB security man on one cargo managed to find two books. But when they went to him to inquire about them, he denied that he had any books. One man went to sleep in his cabin, locked the door, and in the morning he woke up and saw a Bhagavad Gita on his table. Probably some devotee had opened the window on the street-level cabin during midnight. But for a KGB, all these things were such a puzzle. They were so disturbed and fearful of the activities of ISKCON. They thought there must be some high-level intelligence planning these actions. Of course, I became quite curious. So I took Srila Prabhupada's Gita from there against all the warnings. And indeed, it totally smashed all of my ideas for life. In a very short period, I became a devotee and went to join the Begovaya temple in Moscow. But before that, one day I was sitting together with my teacher in his room. He had spent over 10 years abroad where he was engaged in his, quote, confidential service. Afterwards, he settled down in Moscow in a more convenient engagement. That's what most of KGB men used to do at some point. We were discussing about this and that. Then one of my fellow students entered the room. He sat down, and for a while, he and my teacher talked. I noticed that the student had some book with him. I thought it was some studying material. After a short time, the student excused himself and left the room. I was about to continue our conversation when my teacher made a smile and inquired from me whether I noticed which book the fellow student had with him. I said no. It was a book from Hare Krishnas. Then the teacher proceeded to tell how he had sometimes observed devotees while he still was serving in the West. I knew very little about devotees at that time. So I asked, what are these people actually about? My teacher seemed to be quite indifferent to Krishna consciousness, but he definitely showed some appreciation for certain qualities of the devotees. Quote, Hare Krishnas are very smart people, really smart. Sometimes they are penetrating like water going in holes. There is practically speaking no place that they cannot sell their items. But such fanatics they are. They have their music sessions on the street often. Joyous people. Probably they don't have so much problems. I have looked through some of their books. It's nothing for me that I can say. But something mystical there must be in those books. Some of our men really got into those books. We once had one agent in the West, for example. Then the man related quite a story. He did not mention where it took place, neither he mentioned any names. And I knew the subtle etiquette that if someone tells you something like that, you don't ask any questions. But just for the sake of convenience, for the readers, we can name the central figure of the story, Leonid. My teacher had never met Leonid. He himself got the story from the KGB man who was assisting Leonid. So one time Leonid was on the way to meet a certain contact person. And those meetings were strictly timed. A slight discrepancy and you were supposed to be dismissed. Leonid's assistant was walking nearby. His duty was to make sure that nobody followed Leonid. Everything seemed to proceed according to plan. But then, the men noticed that there was some fight on the street. Two devotees were being attacked by some group of big rowdies. We call them, of course, but much more suitable name is demons. And it was not just some innocent teasing. They were really beating severely two young devotees. There was a heavy rule for agents that they should never get involved in anything, especially to avoid unnecessary contact with the police. Leonid, however, stopped and looked at the scene. Suddenly he rushed forward and attacked the fellows who were harassing the devotees. His assistant was shocked. "What is this? This is forbidden. We are in a hurry for a meeting. And here he is just clashing with these guys." Leonid quite quickly managed to make a mush out of those fellows. I was not told too many details about the ghastly scene, but I know what our trained people are able to do. Teeth are flying, heads are smashing against the wall, blood. After Leonid protected the devotees, he was in a hurry to get to his meeting. But the devotees were following him. They wanted him to take a book. Finally, just to get rid of the boys, he took one and threw some money at them. He was on time to his meeting. His assistant inquired later on why he partook in a fight. It was totally against the rules. Leonid had answered that he could not stand to see those young fellows being beaten like that. And there was something inside him, he said, that impelled him to act. We know who that is, Paramatma. 2 months later, Leonid informed his assistant that somebody was after him. KGB men have this intuition. He was very depressed and frustrated. His assistant replied that he himself hadn't noticed anything special, but Leonid was continuously disturbed. The assistant described, "One day we were in our villa. I did my cooking in the kitchen. Then I went to the corridor. There was a glass door leading to the TV room, and I saw Leonid on his knees in front of a sofa, and he had that Hare Krishna book placed on the sofa. His palms were folded together, and he was murmuring something, his eyes tightly closed. I thought, my goodness, what's happening? He has gone mad. Or is there some microphone within the book, and he is reporting?" They never instructed us to do like that. Maybe the opposite party has already got him to work for them. Or maybe he does like this in a case they Or maybe he does like this in a case they come. Find him like that and think he's a Krishnaite. He was murmuring some help, that he cannot take this any longer. I contacted Moscow and said that now he's getting crazy. Interest in Krishnaism, that I think that soon they might catch him. But Moscow replied that this is true. They already knew that there were at least 6 different sources that local security are following him. I got the order to immediately leave Leonid and go. However, almost 6 months went. They asked from Moscow, "What's happening with our Leonid?" I said, "I don't know. There was even nothing in the newspapers. Maybe they did not capture him." I was instructed to check the situation, but I could not find Leonid in the house. For 2 months I tried to locate him. I made friends with the neighbors. It took another 3 months to gradually hear about him. The neighbors said Leonid had changed suddenly. He still visited them occasionally, but did not accept alcohol anymore. He also criticized that they were offering him meat. He had accepted only apples. Once police came to his house and went away. Leonid explained that they were after somebody who had stolen a car, and Leonid looked like him. Then they realized the mistake. I think they must have I think there must have been something else going on. Perhaps they came after him and saw he is into Krishnaism. I don't know. The last thing the neighbors knew was one day he shaved his head, and after that no one heard about him. This was all my teacher had heard about from Leonid's assistant. Of course, as devotees, we might guess what had happened. Krishna obviously reciprocated. With the KGB agent after his helpful act for the sake of the devotees, and Srila Prabhupada's books took care of the rest. Probably he is now somewhere happily engaged in Krishna's service. Anyway, since there are other people who have to speak, I'll leave this on the bulletin board. Let me see, I've got a note. Okay, so who's next? Barda? So if you want to please Srila Prabhupada, then we know what to do. I have to give you some room to get out of here. Okay. Take the mic.
Take the mic.
Let me get it away.